Welcome to the Caped Crusader Cast, a show where we talk about the brand spanking new series Batman, The Caped Crusader. Our podcast offers a deep dive into each episode and a full series analysis from two nerds who really like Batman. And seated across the table from me, and he does not know that I'm about to hit the magic button that will shackle him to the chair, and then I am going to do weird stuff to him in my basement. Mike Staub.
Oh, wow. And seated across the table from me, he's doing it all for just a big old bowl of pudding, Mr. Jordan Hill.
We are back here at Caped Crusader Cast.
Yeah, we're back, all right.
And we are covering episode 5 of Caped Crusader, titled The Stress of Her Regard, which is the big Harley Quinn episode this season. We finally got there. It has been an interesting journey, Mike, with Caped Crusader so far.
It has been.
And wild ups and downs.
This episode is so incredibly strange.
It is.
It's so incredibly weird.
I think I like it.
I think I like it, too. And obviously, they have gone in a direction with Harley Quinn, or Harlene Quinzel, whatever you want to call her. They've gone in a direction with her that is completely unlike anything we've ever seen before for this character.
Yeah.
This episode is kind of her, you know, for lack of a better word, oh geez, I can't believe I'm going to say this because it's totally a dumb entendre. This is like her coming out party in this
series.
Wow. I know.
You went there.
But it is though, right? On multiple angles. And they've been building Harlene Quinzel up for the last 3 episodes. We meet her as a psychotherapist.
Mm-hmm.
Then we meet her again as a psychotherapist who's helping the GCPD kind of come up with a
strategy for Batman.
Strategy and a profile for Batman.
Yeah.
And then after that, now she's the villain. And, you know, not everything adds up.
Mm-hmm.
But there are some interesting and fun things that happen in this episode. But if you're coming into this expecting your classic style Harley Quinn with a different kind of style on her, you're going to be, I don't know.
Disappointed.
Would say disappointed is the right term, because, you know, it's a very different take on the character. I think in the last episode where we broke down what we thought this new Harley Quinn might've been, I think we were pretty dead on how they handled this character.
Yeah.
And it is a stark departure from what we'd expect. But in the end, does it work? I don't know. What do you think?
I think it does work, but big asterisk on that. It's sort of like, what version of the character is this? So I did a little very, very light research, and I guess this version of the character...
You researched?
I know.
Wow.
I guess this version of the character is supposed to be most similar to the version that was very briefly in that Birds of Prey series.
Okay.
On TV.
The TV
show. Which, like, no one watched.
Yes.
And I'm pretty sure, and I might be wrong, because, again, this was very light, cursory research. I'm pretty sure Mia Sara played that character on the show, and the idea was she was this, psychiatrist who was going to weaponize the things she learned about her patients.
Okay.
I never really watched the show, and this is just basically a little blurb of something I read about the character. So that is the direction they go in. So they have some basis. But you know what? Set the basis aside for a moment. Really, the better conversation is, does this character work or not? I think the answer is yes. I think, actually, it's a pretty good character. I enjoyed watching Harley in this half hour.
Mm-hmm.
It is just, we are always going to be dealing with the dissonance between, hey, this is a cool new character, and she's named Harley Quinn, and then also missing Harley.
Yeah.
Who's a beloved character that you, me, and frankly everyone else adores from Batman the Animated Series.
That's one of those characters that, I'll be honest, even as she's become oversaturated over the years, Harley Quinn as a character has never been one of those characters that people I've talked to have ever been like, I hate that character. I almost never hear that specifically about Harley Quinn. And I understand why the production side would want to do this with the character, do something vastly different, for a few reasons. One, everyone's so already familiar with Harley as a character. We know how she is. She's been in a lot of stuff. She is a character that, like, catapulted from, like, brand new character in 92 to being the most popular thing DC has.
Right.
And
she's their Deadpool.
She's essentially their Deadpool. And that's a cool thing. And that's amazing that the character's been able to get that degree of popularity and acclaim over the last 30 years. But it's weird when we have this version of Harley that's running alongside of Harley in her own cartoon. Because there's another Harley Quinn cartoon that's happening as we talk about this. As we come off the Suicide Squad movie and the Gunverse, and the Suicide Squad movie has its version of Harley Quinn, you know, the Margot Robbie Harley Quinn, which is closer to the animated series Harley Quinn, the cartoon, the Harley Quinn animated series Harley Quinn. And now we have this very different, weird, dark take on the character. And it's interesting that she exists as a clown, right? Because she's a clown.
Yeah.
Essentially, she's a Harlequin, right? Without, like, having Harley Quinn without the Joker is okay, but like the fact that she's still very much like a clown, dressed up like a clown, like that almost doesn't make sense anymore. Because the fact that she would dress up like the clown in the original series is, or Jester, is because she was obsessed with the Joker. Like, why do we need clown Harley Quinn in this if she's just going to be torturing billionaires?
Right.
Like, what's the point of the clown?
She makes sort of this lame joke because she dresses up this one client, Emerson, whatever, I forget his last name. That's not important. She dresses him up as the king.
Yes.
And she says, well, I'm the jester. But, like, that's not why.
Yeah.
But you're right. There's now no connective tissue between her and her image.
Yeah.
Like, why does she have to be a clown? Why can't she be literally anything?
And, like, when she brings some of these incredibly wealthy, powerful people down to her playpen, she does dress them up in all sorts of things, where they're dressed up like a little boy, they're dressed up like an Egyptian god, they're dressed up
a baby. An elf.
Yeah, an elf, a king. So, like, none of that also screams clown to me.
No, it's all, there's no particular theme.
Because even though she calls it the playpen, it's not like they're dressed up like toys.
No, they're dressed up like maybe children in costume, maybe.
Yeah, maybe. It's really loose, and I don't dislike the design.
I think the design is good, but again, Mike, I think you hit the nail on the head. Mm-hmm. It's totally divorced from anything in particular. Just literally stating again what you just said, she was always dressed as a clown because she was the Joker's henchman. Now that there is no Joker to speak of, and it looks like there will not be, why is she a clown? That is kind of a lingering thing in my mind. And it's like, what?
It's weird, because also all the times we've met Harlene Quinzel before in her office at the police department, there has been nothing of her character that says anything to do with clowns or the circus or any, like, it doesn't fit. It's almost like she's a clown or a jester or a harlequin or whatever you want to call her. It's almost like, too, her style is very much like jester, like Pagliacci almost kind of clown.
She is much more Italian carnival, like commedia clown.
Yeah.
That's the look.
Yeah. And there's nothing about her in the show so far that shows any sort of appreciation for that style of art.
No, yeah.
Appreciation for that style of comedy. Like, it doesn't make sense. Like, I would almost rather her look would make more sense if she was dressed like, maybe she's also dressed like some sort of kid's costume.
Right.
Maybe
she's... Or she's like dressed as a teacher if everybody else is a child or something like that.
And like, I understand why she wouldn't do that, because she's hiding her face a little bit. But like, and she has this name Harley Quinn that they refer to her as. But like, at the same time, it's like she dresses more like the teacher normally in her normal, like, not in costume look.
Right.
So like,
that's
while I like the design, and I find the episode to be fun, and I think it's a good, weird episode, and I think that, like, what she does in the episode is interesting. I don't quite understand the... I don't understand why it's themed the way it is. I don't understand the visual storytelling of it all. And maybe it's done this way because, you know, I don't want to keep getting on his case for this, but maybe it's done this way because maybe, you know, Bruce Timm was like, I want to break away from what Paul Dini did. I don't want anything from what Paul Dini did for this character to be part of this character anymore. I want to create something new.
Sure.
And I'm not sure if Paul Dini and Bruce Timm even get along anymore. Like,
maybe not.
Maybe not. Yeah. That might be part of it. You know, Paul Dini's,
I don't think they had a falling out. I think it may just be that Paul Dini was like, listen, I'm old. I don't want to do it.
Well, he's reclusive.
Right.
Yeah. You know, Paul Dini allegedly is a reclusive guy. He's made his money and he kind of just keeps to himself, which honestly, when you've created the things you've created in your life, yeah, you have every right to kind of
also, frankly,
just,
Paul, you made a better show. So
yes,
you don't need to be involved with this one.
Exactly. Exactly. And is it Bruce Timm? Or is it a room full of writers saying, I got a great idea for Harley Quinn, let's do it, and then they run with it because they don't want to, you know, they want to try something different.
I think both can be true. If we want to break down the look a little bit, because I think it's better to do it now rather than in episode. So in the promos for this, I confused her look for like maybe like a China doll or something like that, because she had like the white porcelain face. And of course, this Harley Quinn is Asian. And I was like, okay, maybe they're going for that. I was actually wrong. I think what they're going for now, and I did some reading, this is, yeah, Mike, you were totally right. This is much more like Italian carnival style Harley Quinn in what looks like dark green and yellow. So it's got like this kind of sickly toxic almost look to the color scheme.
She looks like poison.
Yeah, and it is less, and I'm not being uncharitable, but it is less the gymnast cheerleader version of Harley Quinn.
Yeah.
This woman is a little bit heavier, right? She has a more mature frame to her.
Yeah.
So they've really changed just about everything. And then, of course, they did their favorite thing on this show, which is to essentially reverse polarity, right? Because it is her human face, her psychiatrist face that is a little bit more jolly and humorous and whatever.
And the mask.
Right. And her clown is totally serious, right? Like, deadly serious. So, and of course, they went more with a mask approach with this, with this kind of, like, blank-looking eyes, which is pretty scary.
Yeah, she's terrifying in this show.
Yeah.
They made Harley, they made this version of Harley Quinn very scary as compared to classic Harley Quinn, who's terrifying because she'll blow your face off with a gun, but like,
well, you know, original Harley was, forgive the phrasing, like a crazy bitch. Right?
Yeah,
she was just
crazy. Well, I mean, ICP.
This right, insane clown pussy. Yes, the whole. I'm not afraid to say it. This Harley is. What she's doing is crazy, but the scariest part about her is that she seems eminently sane.
Yeah.
Very sane and serious. And this is a plus. This is a positive. I like what she's doing in this episode. This is now anti-hero territory, right? Because the people she's preying upon, and while it is wrong what she's doing, these are powerful, selfish, horrible men that she is punishing. Though, of course, yes, what she's doing is wrong, and she is torturing them. But we can almost forgive it because of the group she is targeting.
Yeah.
Right? So now we run into a separate issue that is worthy of discussion. There's a pretty vocal online community that do not like what was done with this character because they feel it is, I'm going to use the W word.
Yeah.
Woke.
Okay. I think most of those people, and I will fight this right away, I think most of these people are saying that because they took a character that is historically white.
Right.
And made her Asian.
And not just white, but like white, thin, blonde, attractive.
I personally, and as you and I have said in this show, I don't really care about that. Like, that is the most surface level nonsense change kind of ever.
Well, it doesn't matter.
Yeah, exactly.
Like, nothing about her being Asian, like, fundamentally changed the character.
No,
so the race argument is nonsense.
It's stupid.
Where they have maybe, I hesitate to say, some credibility is that this does seem to be a, you know, sort of a fuck the patriarchy, you know, pro-woman character.
Which
but
is fine.
Wasn't Harley kind of trending that way already?
Harley has been that way for a long time, ever since she kicked the Joker to the curb.
Right, exactly.
And that's been that way for a long time, and Joker is terrible and treated her like absolute garbage. So, yeah. And you know what? If you watch the Harley Quinn show, it handles it incredibly well in a bombastic, absurdist way, but it's amazing. And this episode, and this you know, it is a smash the patriarchy type of thing, but I didn't even see it as that. I didn't see it as smash the patriarchy. I saw it as, you know, hey, these are incredibly wealthy businessmen.
That's the thing. These are not likable men.
Yeah, they're not likable people. They're incredibly wealthy businessmen who have not done anything good with their money for society.
Right.
So she's not even hurting them, really. She's torturing them into giving away their fortunes. So she's essentially forcing them into, like, she's forcing them into like philanthropy. It's like forced philanthropy.
Yeah. Which like, I am pretty sure they eventually killed themselves, by
well,
the way. That's
the first guy who's dressed up as like the god, the Greek god, walks into traffic.
The
Egyptian pharaoh walks into traffic. But like also though, and now hear me out, and maybe I'm wrong here. I feel like Joker and Harley were always characters that were going after the rich and powerful to cut them down. I feel like that's a fundamental parts of what they did in the original series. Like Joker robs people constantly.
Well, I want to be clear. Like I'm fine with whoever they want to torture and or kill. I mean, it's I'm here for the fun. Okay, great. But I'm trying to speak to this very vocal community of folks who are critical about this show because it is quote unquote woke.
Well,
I'm only challenging the race part. I think in some sense it is woke. I don't know that it's woke in a bad way.
No.
I think you can have a villain character who uses woke politics as part of their villainy.
Yeah.
I think that actually is kind of awesome. I'm just not sure that that's
like Red
part
Claw.
Of the show's messaging. Oh, God, why would you bring up Red Claw? Why? Terrible.
Batman's an equal opportunity crime fighter.
You know what? Every time I'm lamenting that we're not presently recording Batman Tastacast, remind me of Red Claw.
Sure.
And that not everything Batman Taz has is terrific.
Red Claw.
Yeah, exactly.
Everything blows up.
Red Scare, more like
it. Yeah.
Okay, so... Yes, the character is Asian. There's nothing wrong with that. The character is against rich people. There's nothing wrong with that. I think here is maybe where I can find some common ground with the vocal crowd. We accept as an audience the original, the Batman the Animated Series, Harley Quinn's flip into her independence because we see why it happens. It's cathartic for us.
Yeah.
She is suffering abuse. The Joker is a obviously terrible partner to her. And we watch her suffer, and we watch her come into her independence slowly, and we watch her make a decision to flip, and she flips. And not only does she flip and become a villain independently in her own right, she then flips villainhood to being a hero.
Yeah.
What a great journey for that character, and we all got to follow it every step of the way. Now suddenly we come into this essentially a new character, but with the same name. So it's kind of coded into us to treat this new one as if we were recognizing her. And we don't see what has flipped her this way. Suddenly there is no Joker.
Yeah.
Suddenly it's just like, oh, she witnessed this in society and took it into her own hands. And it feels a little shallow because we just don't know her.
Well,
we don't know this character,
character. We don't. And the thing that flips her in this episode is she gets flipped because of the secrets that she knows about what these people are really like because she's their therapist.
Right.
Charging $150 an hour in, I guess, the 40s, which has got to be an
fortune.
Astronomical amount
a
of
fortune.
Money, which is why and we find out in the episode before this, you know, she can get in any restaurant she wants and does all that stuff. It's because
right.
she's got a lot of money and she's got power over these guys.
And I hate to poke this, but why are none of her patients women?
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, there is some sexual component of this.
Yeah. Yeah.
And actually, that's another topic I wanted to get into. We
yeah.
could cover it in episode, but again, I'm just going to say it at the front here, and maybe we can get into more detail in a moment.
Yeah.
But this character has a very overt sexuality.
Very much.
Nothing wrong with that, but it is layered into what she's doing with these men.
Yeah.
And it's all a little queasy. And I'm not saying I dislike it. I think it's super interesting.
Mm-hmm.
But I understand why it's so hard to have a conversation about this character online.
Yeah.
Right? You have a lot of people that can't hold two thoughts in their head.
Of course.
A lot of people that just want to brand everything as woke and therefore bad.
Or everything as anti-woke
right.
And good or bad based on whoever you're talking to on whichever social media platform you're
right.
on.
So I guess the TLDR on this is that this is a really hard character to talk about because there's a lot of things in our society right now that make characters like this hard to talk about.
Yeah, yeah. I agree.
I don't know that these writers and Bruce Timm really reckoned with all of that when they created her this way and gave us almost no information about her.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So I think they're culpable.
And there is definitely I think you're right. I think there's like a fetishism kind of like power fantasy about this character.
For sure.
You know, even to the point where like, she dresses a guy up like a big baby. Like, there's something about that. That's kind of weird. There's...
Well, she infantilized all the men. She put them in the playpen.
Yeah,
the idea.
Big baby or an elf or the little boy with the lollipop. A clown. She dresses up one like a clown that looks like her. And, yeah, there's definitely that type of thing. And in this episode, we know that Harleen Quinzel, at the base level, is lesbian. Is she bisexual? Possibly.
Maybe not.
Yeah, maybe not. But like the first scene in the episode, one of the first things that happens in the episode is she's tickling some guy's feet with a feather.
I think she's having one of the other men do it.
Oh, okay. So yeah, maybe I.
Because that she's on the loudspeaker.
Yeah, you're right. So maybe that's part of the whole thing too. Horrible.
Right. Well, she certainly loves. I mean, it's this dominatrix kind of thing.
Yeah.
She likes being in control.
Yeah.
She likes making these men into children. Some of these men seem to like it.
Yeah.
In a weird
way. Couple. Well, the men ultimately over it seems the men have become obsessed with her.
Right. That's certainly the case for Deming.
Yes.
The guy who nearly jumps off the roof of Arkham Asylum.
Yeah.
Or whatever that place is.
Well, it's Arkham Asylum, but geez, it's not Arkham Asylum.
The nicest Arkham Asylum.
Yeah, I feel like this is Arkham before it falls. Like, I
oh,
feel
interesting.
Like
okay.
That's Arkham
sure.
before it gets bad.
Arkham and before all the freaks show up.
And I think as they start putting more freaks into Arkham, it's going to get worse over time if this show continues. And I think when you introduce the Joker into that Arkham, it's when it gets really bad. Like, I feel like Gotham City in this show is not yet at the point where Gotham City is like the most dangerous city in the world, but it's getting there because the cops are all corrupt and
right.
there
and
are super...
That's gotten worse.
Yes,
yeah.
And the superpowered villains are starting to show up and, you know, you have the ultra rich and powerful kind of, you know, bleeding the city dry for all its money. And I think Arkham looking nice in this series or so far in this episode, I think Arkham being nice and new and clean is kind of a barometer to where the city is at this point.
Right, right.
And I think I think the shift might be when Harvey Dent, who's supposed to be the best guy ever, mayor or whatever, gets screwed up. And
yeah.
I think that might be the turning point of when Gotham really starts to see a streak
decline.
That
would be interesting. I would actually...
That's
a
prediction.
I would like that in the structure.
Because like, if he's supposed to represent, hey, the hope for Gotham, the future, I'm going to run a Gotham that's great for the people, blah, 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 and then he gets pulled out of the equation.
Sure, even though he is fucking one Slick Willy
he's
not exactly an upstanding guy himself.
Oh, definitely not. But I think what happens is, I think Jessup is terrible. And I think as his corruption kind of grows, that's when you start to see the city fall apart. The city, because we don't get the city in this show as it is in the animated series or the movies. It's not like overrun with murdering lunatics. There's some crime, there's criminals, and Batman wants to stop them.
Right.
But I feel
the weirdos are not yet the norm.
I feel like they're starting to become the norm now.
Right.
And I think we're going to see more of that as we go on. Or maybe not. Who knows? Once again, we...
No, I think you're right. I think that's a totally legitimate prediction. That seems to be where we're trending already.
Mm-hmm. And also, the thing with it, too, is that, like, there's still not a lot of Batman in the show. There's more Batman in this episode than we've seen, but there he's still not the focal point.
This was my next topic. So, we have this amazing trio of women in this episode.
Mm-hmm.
Renee, of course, Barbara, and Harlene. And the episode is 90% the three of them.
Yeah.
Batman, again, has almost no lines,
mm-hmm.
and his scenes are very short. I understand Batman is, by his very nature, a taciturn, quiet character, but it is, again, a show that is not really from his POV and perspective, and he's usually not the emphasis of the scenes that he's in. We complained about this endlessly last week, and I don't want to make the listener sick of hearing about this, but just please notice, this is another... allegedly Cape Crusader episode where Batman is not really the protagonist.
Yeah.
He's not really the POV character.
Yeah.
This is really a Barbara Gordon episode.
It is.
With Harley as the person she's pursuing as the antagonist.
So yeah, Barbara Gordon is probably the lead in this episode. And Harley,
I think Barbara
and,
Gordon might be the series lead, I'll be honest with you.
Yeah, we're seeing a lot of her.
That seems to be how it's going.
Seeing a lot of her. And maybe, maybe that's a push to make her Batgirl. I don't know.
I'm fine with that, but then don't call the show Cape Crusader.
Yeah, call the show Batgirl.
Right.
Which is
else.
A show I'd watch. I actually saw a picture online today that, you got to love people who do memes on the internet.
Yeah.
And it was a meme. It was, I forget what magazine they're on the cover of, but it's Josh Brolin and Maya Hawke on the cover of a magazine. And then the image next to it is Barbara Gordon, Batgirl, and Commissioner Gordon. And it was like, do it, you cowards. I'm like, you know what? That's not bad casting. I'd watch that movie.
Yeah.
I'd watch that movie.
I like Maya Hawke. I don't know if I like her as Barbara Gordon, but I like her.
Yeah, Maya Hawke's good. She's good. Josh Brolin would be a pretty good Commissioner Gordon.
Josh Brolin would be a pretty good Batman.
I mean,
I know he's a little long in the tooth for it, but I mean, he did a great job as Cable.
Dude,
Cable basically is Batman.
Pretty much. Actually, Cable works so well in that movie because he's so serious.
Yeah. Did you see Weapons?
I have to see Weapons.
Josh Brolin is, he's like the second lead, but he's one of the leads in Weapons, and all he does is run around and kick ass. And I'm like, this fucking guy's a superhero.
Well, he's a cowboy.
Yeah.
I would say this much. If you're going to do Dark Knight Returns,
yeah,
he might be the guy you have to do it with now.
Yeah. So he is older. I'm not sure how old Josh Brolin is. I
60s?
Say, I was going to say he might be 60 now.
60? Well, because I know that Pedro Pascal was supposed to be the lead of Weapons. And, you know, despite Pedro Pascal being great in pretty much everything he does, I'm happy he's not the lead in Weapons because he's kind of in everything.
He would have been good. He's a good actor. Yeah. When you see the film, you'll realize, like, or I think you'll agree, Josh Brolin, like, was the choice.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But I think he'd be a great Batman. You know, you and I were having this conversation a few days ago online.
Yeah.
Like, when Gunn finally picks his Batman, who the fuck is this going to be?
I think he's going to go with a 40-something, but yeah, early 40s,
yeah. Go with a young guy who's not that much older than Corin Sweat, so that Superman and Batman are not that far apart in age, but... I don't think the casting of Batman has ever been harder than it is right now.
Mm-hmm.
And if we could just sidebar for a second.
No,
I'm sure the listener will not mind.
Please. We've done it with Spider-Man.
We've done it every episode.
Every episode.
Here's why the casting of Batman is the hardest now. Yes, now, in 2025. So, one, the elephant in the room is that there's an active Batman right now.
Yeah.
It's Robert Pattinson. He's pretty great. And he could be great in the Gunverse, but if you choose him for the Gunverse... the general population of audience members gets so confused, like, which set of these movies is correct? The Matt Reeves movies don't count, but it's the same guy playing Batman at the same time while those are still being produced. It's a nightmare.
I'm Batman.
And second, and this is for real, every actor who could play Batman has played him.
Yeah.
And then the third problem, which is the larger Hollywood problem, is that, and people laugh when I say this, but it is true, Hollywood kind of forgot to make a generation of stars.
Yeah.
So there's no guys who are like 40 right now who are like ready to step into playing Batman because, you know, they kind of centralized power away from actors and they were like, we don't want to write these deals that we have to keep writing for people like Tom Cruise and George Clooney. We want the power to go back to the studios and, of course, their shareholders. So there's like a generation of guys where it's like, yeah, there's a few of them, but there's not a bunch. And that's why the challenge is present, because you can't just have anyone play Batman. You need a name.
Yeah.
But they forgot to make like a generation of names.
So like, and it can't be Glenn Powell. So the thing
and
is...
I don't think Glenn Powell would be very good at it. I think Glenn Powell's talented, but there's like not enough guys like him, and he's not really a good
fit
Batman.
For
it. No, he's not.
And I think the problem
he could maybe be like Hal Jordan, but they're doing something else with that anyway.
I actually like what they're doing with Kyle Chandler. I think he's actually a good old Hal Jordan.
That's a good choice.
I think the thing with Batman, he's so hard to cast because, like you said, there's no, like, Batman is such a hard role to cast because it's like, you gotta be a good Batman and you gotta be a good Bruce Wayne, and it's almost impossible to get both, especially in this day and age where, like you said, you have really no actors of that ilk in their early 40s. Like, there's really not a lot of guys that do it. And everyone online, all the stupid fanboys, are going to have their terrible fan castings, because fan castings on the internet are 99.9% of the time absolute total garbage. The only times it kind of worked, I think, ever was the brief cameo, and this is a stretch, wow. I think the brief cameo of John Krasinski as Mr. Fantastic was cool.
It was cool. Well, I hate to make a mess of your point, but Krasinski would be a better fit as Reed Richards
probably.
Than Pedro Pascal.
Probably, yeah.
But that's another conversation. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. But yes, that did work.
That did work, and the internet was right about one guy. Most of the time, they're not right at all.
No, well, because they're not casting directors. They don't know what the industry knows.
No. And they were right about him, and they were right about Ryan Reynolds as Deadpool, pushing to get him back in the role.
Well, and Reynolds
but he'd already
made that
Deadpool.
Kind of happen himself.
Yeah, because he's Ryan Reynolds, and he made it happen, and he leaked Deadpool footage he made.
Right.
Because he's smart, and he's like, I want to get this movie made, so he broke the law and leaked it, and everyone went bananas.
But the fan castings for Batman Online and the common ones you see are just not that good. I don't think Glenn Powell is a good fit. I don't think Jensen Ackles is enough of a big star.
Is that the Supernatural guy?
That is the Supernatural guy.
Yeah, no.
I don't think it'll be him. John Hamm, now too old,
too
I
old.
Think, and I think honestly not a great fit, despite the fact that I really like John Hamm. A lot of guys like that just got too old, and... if you're like, oh, let's start thinking of some younger guys, and suddenly there's a blank spot in your mind, that's the industry issue I'm talking mm-hmm. about. We're mm-hmm. just like, oh, yeah, they didn't make enough movies and promote enough stars. Studios that used to churn out like 35 films a year now make like eight.
Yeah.
And they don't have those guys in them.
And I feel like, you know, James Gunn finding David Cornsweet was like finding a needle in a haystack.
It is a needle in a haystack, but also James Gunn did what you should do. Superman can be an unknown because he is Superman.
Yeah.
And that's okay. Batman, I feel like, can't be an unknown. You need a guy whose name can go above the title.
Yeah, and that's why
Pattinson. You need a headliner.
And that's why Pattinson works in the Batman.
And Pattinson's a headliner.
And he's perfect.
He's a star.
Yeah, and he's very, very good for that.
And
but
in a world where there's not a lot of stars.
Yeah. So he's good. There's got to be someone there that they find. But you're right. You need a star. Because who's Batman? That's the question. It's never like, oh, who's Superman?
Right.
It's like, because Superman's a star.
I remember finding out Ben Affleck was Batman. I was sitting in an Applebee's. Was I with you at the time?
Probably.
I think I was. And my initial reaction was like, oh, God, Ben Affleck. How's that going to work? Because, you know, Ben Affleck can be shitty.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
And then some promo material came out or something. And I was like, oh, fuck yeah, Ben Affleck. And then there was the added thrill of like, well, Ben Affleck is an A-lister. This is a real movie star lending credibility to this really fucking shaky DC extended universe, whatever you want to call it. And Affleck was a great choice. There's not another guy like that waiting who is a big young star who can play Batman. So James Gunn is under fucking pressure.
He's under the gun.
He is under the gun.
Sean Gunn will play Maxwell Lord and Batman.
There you go. I am going to put my guy out there on mic just to see if this happens.
Just go for it.
Boyd Holbrook.
Boyd
Holbrook.
Oh,
He has played a lot of small roles over the years, and I think he's Hal Holbrook's son.
Yep.
But apart from having a famous father, Boyd Holbrook, like, he just played Johnny Cash in A Complete Unknown. This is a tall, like, good-looking guy with a lot of presence who I think has been sort of waiting for his turn for a while, and he's got a good superhero look. He was in Logan.
He
was the bad guy.
But the bad guy.
But, like, of a totally different type. He's playing a character type.
The Reavers, right?
That's right.
Yeah.
He's been around. He's kind of ready for a push. But again, you know, that push that Tom Cruise gave to Glenn Powell, we need somebody to give Boyd Holbrook that push in a bigger way. A lot of people saw A Complete Unknown, so it's not like this guy will be, a complete unknown. But he needs another big movie or two before I think it can happen for
him. I don't think that's a bad pick. I know people really wanted that guy who played Reacher. That guy who's just like is it Reacher? He's on the TV show, the Jack Reacher TV show.
I know nothing about.
He is show. Like 9 feet tall, and he's got more muscles than God.
Well, right, which is actually how Jack Reacher is described in those books. He's not described as being Tom Cruise.
Yeah, well, I mean, come on. His name is Alan Ritchson, and he's just he's like a brick of a man.
Okay, but he can't be bigger than Superman. That's
well,
the problem.
He's a big dude, and people were talking about him for a long time. He's 6'3". He's monstrous.
He's a brick house. He's mighty, mighty.
So people were talking about him being Batman for a while, and I don't know how the guy acts. Like, I don't know. But it came out recently that he's not going to be playing Batman. He has had conversations with DC, he said, but Batman's not in the cards, but something else will be in the future.
He'll end up as some other bullshit.
Yeah, what's some other character he could play? I don't know.
Mike, I think it's time for some IMDb trivia for the stress of her regard.
Let's do it.
All right, so in the cold open, which they refer to as just anything before the intro, the person later identified as Fletcher Deming, he's dressed as an Egyptian pharaoh, modeled after the 1966 Batman TV show villain King Tut.
King Tut!
Did you ever watch the 66 show?
Yeah. And I saw the movie.
I definitely saw the movie. I think I barely watched the show.
I've definitely watched the show.
So I don't actually get most 66 references.
I didn't watch it like religiously. I can't tell you the name of every episode. I've definitely seen the movie, and I've definitely seen bits and pieces of the show in my childhood when it was on like probably like TNT or TBS or one of those channels during the day.
Does this make me a fake fan if I don't know the 66?
I don't think so, because I think we were made Batman fans from the animated series.
Right.
It's like, listen, some people start their journey with Final Fantasy VII, and some people started their journey like me with Final Fantasy I, and I got to see the series kind of change over the years, where Final Fantasy VII isn't my litmus test for what makes a Final Fantasy game a Final Fantasy game.
Right.
Final Fantasy I is. So it kind of represents a whole sort of change.
Totally. there you go. We brought it back to Final Fantasy. Yeah, this, you know what it is? It's just, it's the 66 Batman just isn't Batman for me.
It's not.
But I so respect it, and I respect Adam West, of course, and you know, how cool, but I never really watched it.
Grey Ghost.
He's Grey Ghost, man. Still a ranking episode for me. Next, Harley Quinn mentions to Renee, hey, meet me later at Hopper's on Wilson and Lowry.
Hoppa.
And both street... Hoppa. Both street names are callbacks to the first two actors to play Batman, Lewis Wilson in the 1943 Batman serials and Robert Lowry in the 1949 Batman and Robin serials. I've never seen any of those.
No, because I didn't go to the movies in the 60s.
Correct. Or the 40s. 40s. Apparently, yeah. Okay, I did better than IMDb on this one.
Ooh.
It says... Another headline in the first newspaper shown says rare flower found at the site of proposed prison, which of course is a reference to Poison Ivy in the original animated series episode.
Yeah, yeah.
And then we get another, the newspaper article first shown has another headline, March gives bizarre lecture at Gotham Zoo, which is a reference to On Leather Wings. But you know what? I am pausing the IMDb trivia for the Jordan Hugh trivia. Because guess what? I just fucking scrubbed the footage for all the newspaper headlines.
What did we get?
Now, you're going to hear them. Here we
go.
So
I do want to say one thing, though.
Yeah.
If Dr. March is in this show,
yeah,
you know what that means.
Absolutely. But I don't think he is. I think they're just being cute about Batman, the animated series. But...
Listen, man, I just want that man back.
So, Mike...
The animated series has ruined us.
It's ruined us.
It's ruined us. We love Man-Bat now.
I just want to pick up... This is all in that microfiche scene where Batman is just looking through all the different newspaper headlines.
Mm-hmm.
This is what we get.
Okay.
These are the headlines. Toxic garbage barge in Gotham Harbor.
Okay.
And that is what episode, Mike?
Last Laugh.
Last Laugh. All right. Let's see how many of these you can get. I gave you this one already. Rare flower found at site of proposed prison.
Yeah, that's where they bulldoze the prison, right. And that's when she goes after
the first Poison Ivy episode, which is called... You know.
It's Pretty Poison, right?
That's right, Pretty Poison. This is your favorite. Dr. March gives bizarre lecture at the Gotham Zoo.
On Leather Wings.
On Leather Wings.
He likes bats more than people.
He doesn't actually... It is the picture on the paper, so you see the big bat house tit on the cover, which we made a lot out of that tit back
absolutely.
The On Leather Wings episode.
And I also just like that he's not the one who turns into the bat, even though he would want to.
Yeah. Let's see if you can get this one. This one I had to look up, and then I remembered. Boil Out.
Oh, that's easy. That's Heart of Ice.
It is Heart of Ice.
Heart of Ice.
Ferris Boyle.
Ferris Boyle.
Nice.
Yeah.
That was your episode. You covered
that. Yeah.
And then I caught these on the scroll. You have to really be good with the pause.
Dude, this is
feature.
So good, man. You got to like click.
Yeah, so it's the graphic for Got Bats in Your Basement? Call Sherman Exterminator.
Oh, yeah, really?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's the kids, right?
Yes, the episode, a favorite episode of
I've
mine.
I've got Batman in my basement.
Mike has gotten all of these. I've got Batman in my basement. This is an incomplete headline, but I'm pretty sure it's supposed to say Prophet outed as fraud.
Yeah. Oh, is that Prophecy of Doom?
Prophecy of Doom.
Oh my God.
All right. Here's one that you will not get because I didn't get it either. I don't think. Officer Wilkes suspended.
Is that that's not Wormwood.
Officer Wilkes is a red-haired like GCPD officer who works with like Montoya and those guys.
He's suspended. They suspended a cop. That's not like POV.
Oh my God.
Or,
yes,
right?
That is POV.
Is that the guy who, is he one of the three?
Yeah, he's, they suspend him and Montoya and Bullock and whoever, part of the story. He gets his job back at the end of the episode.
Yeah.
You're killing it. State Tech beats Gotham University.
Oh, that's the Fear of Victory.
Fuck. here's one that we never covered this.
I might not get it then. Because I don't remember all the Batman the Animated Series episodes.
It's not a Batman the Animated Series episode, technically. Valestra Associates skips town.
What's Valestra Associates? Is that...
Valestra Associates, so Valestra refers to a character who I think is voiced by Abe Vigoda.
He's alive.
He is dead now.
Well, they buried him.
Yeah. That's such a dad thing. That's such an Italian dad thing.
Yep. What is it again? Valestra...
Valestra Associates skips town.
And it's not a Batman.
It's not an animated series.
Is it
episode.
A Batman movie thing?
It is a Batman movie thing.
It's not the original Batman. Is it?
No.
Is it Batman Returns?
No, it's animated.
So Mask of Phantasm.
It is Mask of the Phantasm. Though that's not something I would have gotten.
No.
And then I think this was a U episode. Stromwell charges dropped And they actually show a picture of Arnold Stromwell.
Stromwell was the that
he's
was
a drug
the,
lord. He's Strom, a crime boss.
Well, that was the two brothers. That was that was the priest and the and the crime lord.
That episode is called. You already got it. It's called. It's Never Too Late.
Never Too Late. Okay.
And I think I got all of them.
Yeah.
I think I scrubbed through it enough to get.
That's pretty
all
good,
of them.
Man.
Thank you.
Thank. Well done, Bruce Timm, and well done, Jordan, for finding that out.
Yeah, so those were... IMDb doesn't even cover all of those, though it did get one that I missed. I think I couldn't pause it at the right moment, but it says there's one for a newspaper ad for a book that says How to Stop Worrying... How to Stop Working and Influence People by Jonathan Crane, MD, who of course we know is the Scarecrow. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And then...
And also in Batman the Animated Series... Alfred does have that line where he's like, oh, what are you reading? How to make friends. What is it? How to make friends and influence people?
That's right.
Yeah. And there's a Screeching Weasel record, which is Screeching Weasel is a great punk band from the East Bay.
Oh, it's real.
They're a real band. They're not in this, but they have an album called I have to get it right. How to Make Enemies and Irritate People, which
nice.
I think is a great name for an album.
I like it.
Yeah.
The last bit of IMDb trivia is something we already discussed. It says, thus far, the version of Harleen Quinzel, who would become Harley Quinn, resembles the character in the Birds of Prey series as opposed to Joker's partner created for Batman the Animated Series. As she's left Gotham at the end of this episode, spoiler, it remains to be seen whether they will continue with that story or bring her back maybe with the Joker in a future episode. That's not really trivia, but it does help with that Birds of Prey connection.
They definitely also dropped the puddin' thing
In
this episode. I don't know if that's IMDb trivia or not, but that's something.
No, but they also do a ha-ha when he can't say the name Harley. So, they're impressions of the Joker are sort of in the shape of it. I did add one other piece of trivia that was just from... What are you singing?
The Joker.
Oh, from what? Oh, yeah, his theme, of course. So the title of this episode is The Stress of Her Regard, and I was like, what is that a reference to? Because I had never heard that before.
Neither.
And I was like, and that phrase is too specific to be nothing.
Oddly poetic,
yeah. I threw it into the old Google machine.
Ooh.
And Google said... The phrase, the stress of her regard, originates from the title of American author Tim Powers' 1989 novel, The Stress of Her Regard. The title, in turn, is a quotation from the poem Sphinx and Medusa by American writer Clark Ashton Smith, which describes Medusa turning the world with the stress of her regard. So
okay.
Meaning a gaze that turns you to stone, which works for this episode.
Mm-hmm.
Medusa has become like a symbol in the fight against the patriarchy.
Yeah.
That is what Harley is doing in this episode. She is not literally turning men to stone, but she is robbing them of their wealth and power.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
That is kind of what's going on here.
Yeah. Which is clever. I think that's a clever thing to do. And she's got that jester hat with all those, like, her jester hat almost resembles a head full of snakes.
Wow.
Mm.
Good pickup, Mike.
Mm-hmm. And because in this version of her jester hat, it's not just the two; she's got three.
Yeah, and she does have that kind of stony look to her.
Yeah, and even her outfit looks more like a cobra.
Yeah.
Right? She's dressed more like a the way her outfit is colored is more like a I don't know if it's a venomous snake.
Yeah. Well, it honestly, dark green and yellow make me think of venom for sure. Or toxin of some kind.
Yeah, yeah, and it's more she's like what is it, a diamond head?
Oh, right. There's a kind of snake with that sort of pattern, right?
Yeah.
Interesting.
I'm gonna look
interesting.
It up. It might be... You see, all my years of the of studying the Serpent Squad, you know...
They're paying off.
They are paying off. It's a little... She's kind of got the color of a diamond-headed snake, but I'm going to look at a copperhead. Copperhead
Are you just
snake.
Looking up G.I. Joe characters?
Yeah. Serpentor. I am Cobra Commander.
So everybody was snake coated on Cobra except for Destro.
Yeah, Destro.
I don't think Destro is a snake.
He's got a metal face.
He's got a metal head.
Yo, Destro.
And he had the hottest girlfriend.
Yeah.
The Baroness.
The
come
Baroness,
on.
Yeah, I mean.
Hot brunette chick with glasses. Come on.
Yeah, I mean.
you married one. So congratulations to Mike. That was not where I was going with that. You gave me that look.
I had to.
Okay.
What do you want me to say? I can't say it on air. You have to.
You can say it on air. The listener instantly turns it off.
I don't
one of the hosts has a hot brunette wife with glasses.
I don't want to be a braggart.
Okay. Well, I think it's time, listeners. We've gotten to your favorite part of the episode, the detailed plot analysis and synopsis. So I think we're ready to go.
Yeah, I'm good.
All right, this is Cape Crusader Cast, Season 1, Episode 5, The Stress of Her Regard. We begin the episode with a shot of the rooftops in the moonlight, and we transition to a bank heist in progress. Exciting. An alarm sounds. We see some smashed glass. Batman already has the robber in custody. I love this. He's offering to split the cash.
Hey, we'll split the cash with you, Batman.
And then they both see a man dressed as an Egyptian pharaoh walking into oncoming traffic, shouting, "The sun always shines after the storm."
So I can't say I didn't get Maxi Zeus vibes from this guy. I was so hoping this was Maxi Zeus, and I was about to say, "Come, dog brother."
I would have loved Maxi Zeus. Actually, Maxi Zeus would have been the perfect character to rope into this episode.
Yeah. Especially if he was like an investment.
Come, dark brother, and avail yourself of the nectar of the gods. Thank you. Batman's only response to this is, "The hell."
but it's messed up. See, you know it's still relatively early in his career.
Yeah.
Because, like,
he's actually phased.
Animated series Batman would have just been like, he wouldn't have said anything.
You might have gotten a Conroy.
Know what, though? I do want to see a Batman at some point that is, like, kind of over it.
Yeah.
Like, I want to see a Batman that's like, he sees something like that or something crazy go on and just like, he gives an annoyed grunt or sigh. It's like, oh. Because like, I don't mean to bring it here. We always do. Because the characters are parallel.
Right.
They are parallel. Batman and Spider-Man are parallel characters in my book.
Yeah, I think so.
But because Batman is gruff and silent and quiet, you don't get his external monologue.
Right.
Where if that's a Spider-Man situation, he's over it. But he's going to be vocal about over it. Be like, really? Really? This is what you're going to do on my day off?
If he would say something like, "I'm in the middle of something here.
Oh, come on. I'm trying to get dinner."
Right.
You know? Man, I can't believe they made hot dog cart a card.
Bagel
with schmear.
If listeners have seen the Magic the Gathering Spider-Man set, it is obscene. I mean, not only are the cards obscenely powerful, but like they have mined every little inch of Spider-Man lore for any card they can make.
There's a pigeon.
They have
that
a venomized cat, Mike.
Yep. They have a venomized. Yeah. I love it.
Anyway, so this pharaoh is walking into traffic. He says also, "I miss you through to my bones." Who does he miss? Who is he talking about? We don't know yet. Batman unfortunately stops the man from being hit by the truck, and the pharaoh's not happy. He calls Batman a peasant and demands that he unhand him. Something is up.
I thought we were going to get to meet Joe Black. I was really looking forward to it. Meet Joe Black. That's the best scene in that movie.
That movie's great. I wish it wasn't 3 hours long because it's full of hits.
But quite literally, when Brad Pitt gets hit by a truck and then a car.
Everything gonna be Irie. That's what he says it, not me. I'm quoting him.
Dude, every time he gets hit by that car, I laugh.
It's that he gets hit twice.
Yeah. And it's just like out of nowhere because it's this really nice touching moment and then he gets hit by a truck.
I have some admiration for that moment. Do you know that's not CGI?
No,
this is a real fact, listeners. You can look this up. That moment where Brad Pitt gets hit by two cars in that ridiculous Meet Joe Black scene, they created the most expensive real life like model dummy of a human being ever created. Like a thing, the thing costs like $150,000 or whatever. And Brad Pitt, this is real. Look this up. I'm encouraging you to look this up. Brad Pitt had to get it in writing that the doll would be destroyed at the conclusion of filming because it was too lifelike. And he was afraid someone was going to like cart it off and have sex with it or something.
Oh, well, like that's not happening now?
It's absolutely happening.
I can tell you right now, you can go online and you could probably find your favorite anime character and spend like 10 grand on the doll.
You sound like Walter from Big Lebowski. Oh, you need a toe? I can get you a toe today with nail polish.
So the thing I want in my life is when my brother and I are in our 50s.
Yeah.
To be our Halloween costume.
What?
I'll be the dude and he can be Walter.
Excellent.
How good of a Halloween costume is that?
That's a good Halloween costume.
I just have to grow my beard.
Can I be Donnie?
You can absolutely be Donnie.
Nice.
Who's your new kid?
Call me Joey. Call me Donnie. Yo, this is one fucked up game show.
I can't wait for these conversations in our next podcast. Anyway.
That's right. Well, are we plugging that yet? Sort of. We haven't recorded that yet.
No, next week.
We get the episode's intro, which is fine. And it's only fine. We come back into our first scene. It's a mugshot on a newspaper of Fletcher Deming. Fletcher Deming is voiced by David Krumholtz, by the way.
Yeah, who is me. Yes.
I am David Krumholtz.
He is you 10 years later.
Well, I'm like the slightly Asian David Krumholtz.
He's the Jewish
and
version.
And he's the Jewish David Which Krumholtz. Which is great. We are the same David Krumholtz.
Yeah. It's great when we're
both. It's just one of us is rich and famous and Jewish, and one of us is poor and unknown and Chinese.
You have a podcast.
And I have a podcast.
But I will say.
I'm sure he has a podcast,
I will say,
too.
When I watch the movie Oppenheimer and I see Cillian Murphy and David Krumholtz talking at a table, I'm like, that's about right.
I really look like David Krumholtz in that movie, in Oppenheimer particularly.
Yeah. I think I sent you a picture of the two of them chatting, like, hey, I was talking about a D&D game.
Exactly. I have to start feeding you orange slices against your will. Did you eat yet?
So good.
I am going to have a dumb moment. I forget the name of the very real scientist that David Krumholtz plays in Oppenheimer.
Oh, yeah.
Actually, if we could look that up for a moment so I don't sound completely dumb, I would appreciate that.
Yeah.
But I remember I was watching Oppenheimer, and I was loving all the David Krumholtz scenes, what little there were. Because he's really one of Oppenheimer, Cillian Murphy's few friends in that movie, because Oppenheimer's in opposition to so many
Robbie.
Characters.
He's Robbie.
Robbie what?
It's
I mean, his last name is Robbie. Do you remember
Isaac? It's
Isaac Robbie or Robbie?
Isidore Isaac Robbie.
Isidore Robbie or Robbie.
Robbie.
I remember feeling bad for that guy because Oppenheimer invites him on the Manhattan Project.
Yeah.
And Robbie says no.
Yeah.
I don't want to do that. And I felt bad watching the movie because I didn't know history. And I was like, oh, his friend, like, he didn't get in on this great thing that, like, might have, like, propelled his career. Isidore Robbie created the microwave and the MRI after that. So he was fine.
Yeah.
Everything worked out for him.
Well, the good thing about what he created is that the microwave, it's incredible because it can make something incredibly hot on the inside, but ice cold on the outside.
Right.
Yeah. It's wild how that works.
Yes, it is. It is wild. I can't say what I wanted to say. Don't worry about it.
Oh.
Off mic later. Where are we? We have, Fletcher Deming's mugshot on the newspaper in the transition. Batman and Alfred are in conversation. And Alfred is just as confused as we are.
Yeah.
This guy, the Pharaoh, he's apparently a billionaire real estate baron.
Mm.
And Batman says, probably as Bruce Wayne, he saw him at a party just a few months ago. He was fine. And now he's fucking locked up in Arkham.
Yeah.
Apparently, a few weeks ago, he donated his entire fortune to charity, and Batman has the newspaper with that headline there to reference. Alfred refers to Deming as a selfish man. He's surprised that he ever would have donated his fortune in the first place. Batman correctly believes that something is going on here. Mike, speaking of that something going on, we have, I would love to say the episode's weirdest scene, but actually just one of the weirdest scenes.
It's strange, man.
So
I'm not going to say it's not weird.
Gird your loins, as I describe this next scene. We hear some laughter, and I was like, oh, is this maybe the Joker is coming?
It's
something?
Not. Unless that guy dressed up as a clown is the Joker.
It's some weird sex thing. I don't know. a man who is dressed not just as a generic clown, but as Pagliacci, like in the white and black Pagliacci costume. He's strapped to a chair. He's barefoot. A man is tickling him with a feather. You just see the hand, but he's like being kind of like tortured in a weird sexual way. I don't know. He's like crying, laughing. You hear this sultry woman's voice on a loudspeaker, which is, of course, Harley Quinn. We see her in silhouette. And she wants him to promise to give away his fortune. He makes the promise, but she doesn't believe him. So on the torture goes. And I'm just sitting there watching this like, what the fuck?
Yeah, man, this is one of those shows where it's like me, there's so many memes about this. It's like me watching anime when nobody's around. It's like guys fighting each other. And it's like me watching anime when my family walks in and then nobody has clothes on.
Right, exactly.
And it's just like,
it was that kind of a moment.
That's why I watched this episode by myself in my basement.
Yeah. And this is just part one of this weird fetishistic thing that Harley Quinn
has
going on.
Well, she does bring up fetishes in the prior episode. She does. So
she's clearly a sexual character, but it is odd.
Yeah, and she thinks Batman has a few fetishes, which he might.
I guess.
I don't know. But see, we keep coming back to this question. Is Batman sleeping with these women? Maybe he doesn't.
You've brought that up before, exactly,
because
like that.
Maybe,
I think he is with some.
With
I think
some,
he has needs like any person.
Like anyone else. But I think the thing is that Do his needs like Batman is a sociopath, right?
No,
he's not a sociopath. Batman is what? There's something wrong with him. Like he's completely detached from reality.
I don't think he is.
You don't think he is?
No, I think Batman is sane. I've never regarded Batman as an insane character.
You don't think Batman's crazy?
He does things that are beyond what I would do.
Okay.
And they're beyond my understanding, okay. But I think he's an obsessive.
Okay, I'll give you that. Yeah, he's obsessive.
That's
for sure.
I don't think he's a sociopath.
No, sociopath's not the right word.
I think, of course, I always have the Conroy Batman in my head, but like, he's too compassionate to be a sociopath or a psychopath.
No, that's true.
He is obsessive.
Obsessive, I'll give you.
In terms of sex, you know, is he having sex with these women that he goes on these dates with? Let's say for 19 out of 20 of the women,
no.
But I think he's having something
a Catwoman
here and there.
It's got to be a Catwoman. It's got to be a Talia al Ghul.
Well,
it's
actually,
gotta be...
Mike, that's an interesting theory. Is he only sleeping with the weird women?
Well,
maybe.
The guy dressed up as a bat.
Well, actually, not to get too mired in this because we're going to take a long time on this episode, I guess.
Sorry.
But no. Just don't apologize. This is a great discussion. Since Bruce Wayne is not a real person and he is just the cover, he's the act, maybe Bruce Wayne doesn't sleep with any of those women.
It might be that, yeah.
You know, maybe he can't even achieve any kind of a sexual fulfillment from that, even if he is having sex with them.
He's got to be Batman.
He has to be as Batman because that's the real him.
This is a psychology.
This is the stuff Harley Quinn, Dr. Quinn, Harleen Quinzel,
Dr. Harley Quinn, medicine woman.
Right. Exactly.
Yeah. Jane Seymour.
She's carrying some smallpox and shit. Okay. We get our next scene. We get an exterior shot of the Gotham Diner. This is going to be our girls' club scene.
Yeah.
Inside...
Girls' lunch.
Barbara and Harley are meeting over coffee. They're commiserating over the state of the city. And Harley says you just have to laugh it off. You should hear some of the things her patients say. How's she dealing with all
that? She's breaking that patient... doctor-patient confidentiality.
She's breaking all kinds of things. We get Montoya enters the diner, completing this little trio here of these female characters that they've well established at this point. Hey, lady cop, says Harley. I don't know why that annoyed me, but it did.
I get it. As opposed to just saying...
just saying, hey.
Hey. She called her lady cop.
I don't know.
Maybe that's what she wants to be called.
I mean, Harley likes Renee. I mean, that's...
Maybe it's like
on.
Lady Bird.
It was annoying.
Starring Saoirse Ronan.
Saoirse Ronan, does she have a place in the Batman universe, I wonder? I guess not.
Are there any Irish villains?
She doesn't have to just be Irish.
I am the Mad Hatter.
I don't think that's how that goes.
Martin Short should be the Mad Hatter.
He has played him.
He has?
He was the television series Mad Hatter, not for Batman. In one of the networks, probably ABC, made an Alice in Wonderland in the early 90s, and he was the Mad Hatter, and he was fucking great.
Well, of course he's great. I was thinking of Batman Mad Hatter, but
he could still be a great Mad Hatter.
Yeah, he's...
Because being
he's
a creepy not... little old man is also really good as the Mad
and
Hatter.
He's also so mean.
He can be mean.
He's incredibly funny, but his humor is so mean.
Yes.
Yeah.
He would still be awesome.
Awesome.
Okay. Montoya is concerned about Gordon, and she feels he's like overworking himself to prove himself because guys like Flass and Bullock have been given this new task force, and Gordon is just really overwhelmed. Barbara doesn't know what she would even really say to her dad, and Harley offers to role play.
Which is, I heard that.
And both women are like, simultaneously, no.
No, she rolled a nat one.
Yeah, she's trying to have some kind of threesome.
She's trying to sleep with both of them. And I think that, I guess, in this moment, it seems as though Barbara Gordon is not gay.
No, I don't think she is. She's
despite,
not.
Despite
These are just her friends.
Yeah, those are her friends. But I think Harley's also one of those, like, hey, give it a shot. Like, I feel like she's the type of character to, like, try to grease that wheel.
Right. Barbara heads off, and this is where Harleen asks Renee out on a date.
Yeah.
Renee seems thrilled by
this. So clearly they haven't dated yet, so it seems that...
Well, this has been like a flirtation up to this point.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. We get some ominous music as we get an exterior shot of a skyscraper, and then suddenly we see Batman is inside an office, and we can surmise this is Fletcher Deming's place. He has signed over, at least in one instance, $1.5 million to West Side Charities, but he has signed it Tutankhamun. As in King Tut. I don't know that that's going to clear.
No, I don't think so.
This place is mostly empty, but of course Batman's got to feel around for that secret room behind the bookcase.
Well, he sees the scratches in the floor.
Oh, is that what he followed?
Yeah,
I didn't
catch
that.
He sees tracks of like, oh, clearly something scratched the floor, like a bookshelf moving
open.
Oh,
I see.
Yeah.
Wow.
He's a very good detective.
I guess you're a very good detective,
I would
too.
Say
I did
that,
not see that for some
I would
reason.
Say that Batman is possibly the world's greatest detective.
Well, let's not go overboard.
Detective?
You know, no, you know what? Yeah. Not in this show. In this show, Batman is not the world's greatest detective. In this show, the world's greatest detective is Barbara Gordon.
Yeah.
And then there's this other weird guy, and we learn things through him. That's pretty much the framing.
Yeah.
It's just like, I don't know, give the girls all the characterization stuff, and Batman just furthers the plot.
Batman.
That really is the structure. He goes into the secret room behind the bookcase. I don't know how to quite describe it. It's like an Egyptian-themed secret office.
Yeah, which is weird.
So I guess Fletcher Deming's obsession was the pharaoh of Egypt.
It could have been Maxie Zeus.
It should have been Maxie Zeus. I'm not sure if this happened to him before he was getting treated, shall we say, by Harley Quinn. Like, did he already have the pharaoh thing going for him? I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
But Batman finds his checkbook, and he notices that from the checkbook, first of all the checks are basically depleted, just leaving the stubs. And the stubs reveal, at least on top, the last one he wrote out was to Harlene Quinzel for $150, which is a fortune in 1940s money, as Mike assessed earlier.
Yeah, for like, so I would say that, I would imagine that a...
This is per session.
Yeah, per session. So I imagine a session with a psychiatrist or a therapist now is probably
still pretty expensive.
I would say now it's probably between $100 and $200 without insurance. So
possibly more than that.
Yeah,
but
possibly
$150
more,
in 1940s money is like 10 times that amount.
Yeah, exactly.
Feels that way.
Mm-hmm.
So, hey, a smoke bomb hits the floor because guess who's outside,
yeah,
Mike?
Dude,
guess who's back?
Back again.
Flash is back. Tell a friend.
I also love that they throw the smoke bomb in there to get rid of Batman, and Batman's just like... No, he throws it right back out at them.
It is very funny. Flass and Bullock are there with their new task force that we were just talking about, the anti-bat task force, and Batman just throws the smoke bomb back at them.
And then you gave Batman the ultimate advantage of cover.
Correct. But then Batman does like his thing of Batman in the Shadows, which is where he just takes out everybody in the smoke.
And knocks everyone out.
And that's that.
He ain't in there.
All that's left is Flass and Bullock, and they've been made a fool of.
He's not here.
Then we go to another therapy session with Dr. Quinzel, another rich man. This one is complaining about his workers unionizing.
Yeah,
despite
Walt Disney.
All that he's done for them. Well, it's honestly all of them.
But he does kind of look like Walt Disney.
I don't think that's what they were going for.
I think they might have.
He didn't look enough like Walt Disney.
You're right, but
he
also
looks like Andrew Ryan for that case. Oh, okay, Andrew Ryan looks like Walt Disney. All right.
Yeah, all right. I mean, and well, also well, Walt
okay,
Disney.
You know what?
Walt
Fine.
Disney historically. Hated unions. They made him so sad.
These rich fucks all hate unions.
I know.
They
I know,
all hate
I know,
unions.
But,
they don't want to pay people.
But like Walt Disney's like bouts of depression were mainly caused because of unions and lack of trains.
That's all true. He says at the end of the session that he had a great session. He feels like his blood pressure dropped 20 points. That's not going to last.
No.
Harlene doesn't feel like the sessions are doing anything at all, and she like presses this magic button and it activates like shackles on his chair, and then she monologues for a little bit. She has tried to get, she calls him Emerson, I guess that's his first name, to see the humanity in his employees and his family members, but to no avail. And we go to this shadowy blackout, and Dr. Quinn, before the blackouts, you know, she removes her glasses and says, "It's time to ratchet things up a bit," right? Very like sexy evil. And then we get the next scene. This is some fucked up shit.
Yeah,
this is Dr. Harlene Quinzel's private inpatient facility, the playpen.
Yeah,
Mike, what do you make of the playpen?
I'll tell you right now, it made me feel awkward and uncomfortable by myself as I watched this episode.
It's fucked up. It's not even just that it's like a little prison with people in costumes. Like there's a queasy sexuality going
it's
on
weird,
here.
It's weird, man.
I don't know. I thought Arkham was bad.
Yeah, I know.
So here Harlene has imprisoned all of her bad boy billionaire patients and dressed them up like babies? I don't know, kids?
Mm.
So one man is dressed like, I called him like Little Lord Fauntleroy, because that's how I think of that look.
Yeah.
And he's like forced to write lines in chalk over and over again. One man is dressed as an elf, forced to search for a bad Christmas bulb.
Okay, so the lights are on.
I know, they should all be out.
They should all be out.
Right, or flickering.
Yeah, because well,
what
first
light
of all,
goes out, they all go out.
Well, that's if they're in series circuit, not parallel.
Whoa! Don't drop some knowledge on me in the middle of this.
Just telling you.
Okay.
That's why parallel circuit Christmas lights are more expensive, because if one light bulb goes out, the whole string doesn't.
That is better.
Yes.
Maybe she gave him that kind.
Probably not, because you would know which one was out, because it would be out.
Well, maybe there is no light out.
He's an angry elf.
He's a very angry elf. One man dresses a baby.
Yeah, which
is weird. He has to, like, eat his peas, but he wants dessert. And then the new patient, Emerson Collins. He's dressed as a king. We see Harley. She's dressed as, we described this in the first part of the episode, a sort of traditional Italian carnival court
jester.
Hey,
how you doing?
Yeah, she has these men torture each other, it seems. Because when she's actually, something's going on. She says to the new guy, Emerson, Emerson Collins is his name, that she wants him to give up his fortune. Mm-hmm. So this is what she does. This is her game.
Yeah.
She, like, captures these guys and makes them give up their money.
Yeah.
And she has them torture each other. So she hands Mr. Belsky this mallet, huge mallet, mm-hmm. and says he can have all the pudding he wants. He just has to make Emerson Collins give up his money. And he says, pudding.
As he's about to slam him with the friggin' hammer.
Right. In a clear reference to the Joker
yeah.
being pudding. Yeah. From original Harley Quinn.
I thought that was stupid.
I thought it was clever, but in a bad way. Like, I was like, oh, yeah, you're referencing the Joker who we wish was here. you know, oh, you're referencing the Joker as in the partner of the Harley Quinn we wish we had.
Yeah.
So a lot of that.
It's better than, I'd rather know Joker than Jared Leto.
Well, that we can all agree to. We get this.
I have to say this. This is an aside.
Yeah, please.
In Peacemaker Season 2.
Which I do not watch.
It's the first episode.
Yeah.
I think it's the first episode. They trash 30 Seconds to Mars for like a solid minute.
Really?
Yeah. Wow.
And that band is not that bad.
But I think it's because Jared Leto was a bad Joker.
I'm sure that's true.
Yeah. Anyway.
We get this microfiche transition that we talked about extensively at the top of the episode that drops all these like fun little Easter eggs from Batman the Animated Series. But they are looking for other evidence of this, you know, unknown criminal, whatever's happening, right? Mm-hmm. So Alfred found another one, Jorge Campos.
Hey!
He was a shipping tycoon. He died 3 years ago penniless because he had donated everything to women's charities.
Yeah, which, you know, good.
And he died in a car crash. He crashed his own car into a tree. So this seems to be the phases of Harley Quinn's treatment, or Dr. Quinn's L. She gets really rich patients.
Mm-hmm.
Billionaires who have a lot of issues. She basically lures them into this false sense of security mm-hmm. and has all their secrets. Then she uses a combination of chemicals and hypnotism to brainwash them.
Mm-hmm.
They give up all of their money and then they kill themselves.
Yeah.
That seems to be how it goes. And that's what we saw in process with the Pharaoh in the beginning of the episode, was that Deming was about to throw himself into traffic. So he was at the end of the treatment,
yeah,
whatever that was going to be. So that's how she works.
Yeah.
So this is where Batman, we figure out that, you know, we're only like 9 minutes into the episode and Batman already figured out, oh, it's the psychiatrist.
Yeah. Right? Yeah, well, because he saw the checkbook.
Right. Here's the checkbook. He hands it to Alfred. And we notice now it's not just the one stub that was written to Harley Quinn.
No.
It's all the stubs in the checkbook.
She's making a ton of money.
Right.
Was Cash.
Written to Harley Quinn. So she's a rich, rich lady. But again,
she's a rich girl.
Like a lot of villains, she is not in it for the dough.
No.
She got to make them pay another way.
Yeah. And she wants to take her girlfriend on a date.
She sure does. To a nice restaurant.
Yes. A nice restaurant.
A nice restaurant.
Hey, we don't know if it's Italian.
Yeah, actually, it didn't sound... They gave a name. Was it Baccio or something like that?
Oh, maybe that is it.
It did sound kind of Italian, actually.
Hey, how you doing? Well, it is Jersey, I guess.
I don't know.
I don't like that Gotham is in Jersey.
It is in the comics now. I don't think that was always the case.
Gotham is Manhattan.
It is Manhattan.
It's Manhattan.
And actually, Gotham City was a name given to New York by Washington Irving,
yeah.
the author.
Yeah.
He was the first person to refer to it as Gotham City, but I guess they took it away.
Why would they give it to...
The fuck, Mike? What is all this woke shit? And
yeah.
Now it's in New Jersey, too?
It's like, listen, The Sopranos is a good show.
But that's about Jersey.
But it's about Jersey. And it just shows you that, like, Batman can't also be there.
He can't be with The Sopranos.
If Batman was in Jersey and The Sopranos are in Jersey, Batman would have beat up Tony Soprano.
Only if Tony Soprano did some shit in Gotham City. Mostly he's just in Bloomfield.
But like, to be fair, if Gotham City existed in The Sopranos, would Tony Soprano not have business there?
Tony Soprano would be in jail.
Yeah.
He would be in federal prison because of Batman plotting his revenge.
With broken limbs.
And AJ would be some kind of little freak that like has a costume.
And then Meadow would probably be some like...
No, Meadow would work for Dent. Meadow would be working in the like the mob crime office or whatever it is.
Yeah.
So...
And that weird priest.
Oh, man. Father Phil.
I hate him.
He sucks.
Father Phil is
my
like
least favorite
one
character.
Of my least favorite characters on that show.
Yeah, he's...
What a pile of... What a sack of garbage.
He's a sack of garbage. He's never redeemed. He keeps showing up a lot after the first season. Quite a bit.
I will say, to this day, I've only watched seasons 1 and 2 of Sopranos, and I've listened to all your podcasts. They're fantastic. Folks,
well,
go out
you.
There and listen to Sopranos podcast.
We just recorded the last episode of the Sopranos podcast.
I know. I saw
podcast.
It, and I shed a tear.
It was over. It's 5 years. We get an exterior shot of Arkham Asylum. This is the nicest Arkham Asylum has ever looked. It's like a pristine, beautiful white mansion facility.
Almost like you'd want to be insane and go there.
Right. It looks beautiful. Inside, Barbara Gordon is being let into Fletcher Deming's cell. That is her client. He wants out, but he is out of money. And he's also very crazy. He still insists that I'm a pharaoh.
Yeah.
Barbara recommends her friend, Dr. Quinzel, for a psych evaluation. And upon hearing her name, Deming like transforms his entire personality. Mm-hmm. He says this line that made me cringe. He says, "Her name feels so good in my mouth."
I know.
And I was like, what the fuck is she doing to these guys? Can she do it to me? Can I make an appointment is my question. A guard does a routine check-in like, oh, you got 5 minutes, whatever. And Deming just fucking makes a break for it. He runs out of the cell.
Yep.
Barbara pursues. He runs to the roof and attempts to jump off because remember, these guys do try to kill themselves at the end of the treatment. Barbara stops him. He is going on. I need to see her. I need to be with her. And she says, tell me her name. And he goes, ha,
ha,
ha. So he never gets Harley out, but instead he does again like a little sly Joker reference.
All right.
Establishing shot of the Gotham courthouse. Inside, Barbara again finds Harleen. And she asks her why Deming knows her.
I like that she calls her Barbie.
Yeah, Barbie.
Because she's Harley Quinn.
Who
was played by Margot Robbie. Who
you
also
think that's
Barbie.
Why they did that?
No. Oh. But it's a nice connection.
Yeah, that's a cute name. Maybe that is why they did that. I don't know. Barbara asks her how she knows Deming, and Harleen tries to throw her off. She says, oh, don't know him. I don't know him personally. And throws her immediately off the scent by being like, oh, I asked out Renee. What food does she like? They talk about a restaurant. So she's pushing her off of this. Then we get an establishing shot of GCPD headquarters. Barbara has brought Gordon lunch. He's very downtrodden. The worst cops on the force have commandeered all my people. So we are seeing some really good continuity from the previous episode, Night of the Hunters, that Bullock and Flash are basically in charge of the GCPD right now.
And they're capturing Batman.
Yeah, and Gordon is left with the scraps, and he can't handle all the crime that's coming in. So I think to your point, Mike, I think we are seeing Gotham City decay before our eyes because the mayor's priorities are out of whack and Gordon can't do
his priorities is getting rid of Batman, not fixing crime.
Right.
Yeah.
So I guess I have to kind of take back something I said in the previous episode, which was that I thought it was odd to have Gordon already as the commissioner because the city was in good shape and getting worse. And then I was like, oh, okay, wait, no. It is good that he's the commissioner because we see how it's happening like out from under him. It's not because of him that the city's getting worse.
Yeah.
So that was good, actually. So I take that back. Renee thinks you need a day off. It's kind of like this touching moment, and Gordon just basically tells her it's not going to happen. But the question she puts to him in this scene, which is a great question, is what do you do in this line of work when the evidence points in the direction you don't want it to point in?
Yeah.
When it's pointing at a friend of yours, and he basically tells her, listen, pursuing the truth is what you have to do.
That's so Jim
Gordon. No matter what.
That's so Jim Gordon.
Absolutely. I wonder who he might be thinking of from his past that he had to investigate and serve up. So.
I mean, probably some of his own guys.
For sure. We get, I think, the best transition in the show, which is this nameplate on the door transition.
Mm-hmm.
So we go from Jim Gordon's office right to Harley Quinn's office. And of course, it's a barber transition because she's in one place and then she's in the other. So now we're back to Quinn's office. It was clever. So she's investigating, and she finds that the place has already been tossed.
Yeah, Batman.
And in fact, she has just missed Batman by, a second. And Harley Quinn's... Sorry, I keep saying Harley Quinn. It's not who she is.
Well, no, they refer to her as Harley Quinn.
Do they?
Yeah, the insane men refer to her as Harley Quinn.
Okay, I'm sorry. Yeah. Well, I am an insane man.
Yeah, well, so let's continue.
Quinn's appointment book is out, and she can look right in it, and she can see, oh, she had appointments with Deming. She lied right to her face.
Yeah.
And then there's the torn-out page about, it could be an appointment elsewhere, but we find out it's an address.
Mm-hmm.
William Hastings, 211 Cliffside.
Mm-hmm.
Hmm, who could that be? Mm-hmm. Now, we did see Hastings before. He's the guy who, like, runs the control room in the playpen. So this is, I guess, another billionaire that she has brainwashed.
Yeah.
So that's where she's going. Barbara's driving along those infamous cliffs at night.
Yeah.
You know, the cliffs outside Gotham that apparently exist.
They're always there.
I don't know where in Jersey Gotham, these cliffs are, but there are cliffs by the water.
Cliffs by Jersey.
It's just part of a special kind of geography, I guess.
Yeah, it's like Springfield, man.
Yeah. There's this great house in the distance, and Mr. Hastings himself answers the door. And Barbara, like, covers herself well and truthfully. She speaks to Hastings about the fact that she's representing Deming, about this psychiatrist that Deming and Hastings share, Harlene Quinzel, and the fact that Hastings has not been to his own office in months. And Hastings basically says, this is a gross invasion of privacy, get out of here, slams the door in her face.
Okay.
Barbara drives away. She's clearly frustrated. She pulls her car off the road, and she's going to do Batgirl now. She's going to go there on foot. And this is like the Batgirl Begins moment.
Yeah, this is kind of like that episode of Batman the Animated Series where Barbara Gordon starts doing Batgirl stuff before she's Batgirl.
I can't remember if that's... Yeah, I think it is I Am the Night.
Yeah.
I Am the Night is it. Batman stops her, and their meeting is quick but meaningful. It's meaningful because they recognize in each other that they both came to the same conclusion about this person, and they're both here to investigate. It is quick because the show actively hates having Batman on screen. So I think giving him more than three lines of dialogue is painful for the writers.
Yeah.
So he has to get out of there before the conversation really becomes like a real thing
that the audience can engage with.
Yeah. There's just too much Batman in this scene, so they make sure he gets away fast.
I have a question.
Yeah.
Can we cut Batman out of this scene?
We can. Mike, the answer is we can cut Batman out of the show and functionally have the same
show. But
then
why is it called Cape Crusader?
I don't fucking know.
Mm.
To get us to watch it, because we're dumb.
Mm. Are we dumb?
Yes, I'm dumb. I can't speak for both of us, I guess.
No, I think we're dumb.
I know for many reasons I am dumb.
Me
I
too.
Can't speak for you.
I agree.
How about this? I'm dumb and I've dragged you down with me.
I think we've both drug each other down and we're both dumb.
We both go down together.
That's right. That's what happens. See, you got to understand, like a ship goes, like when the captain goes down with the ship, the hosts go down with the podcast.
That's right. So Batman grappling hooks away before he can have a meaningful end to this conversation. But don't worry, Renee and Harlene's date is going very well.
Yeah. Well, that's nice.
At least it seems to be. They're flirting. They're talking about figure skating, spinny things. It's cute.
That stuff isn't bad.
It's not bad. Also, in an endearing way, Renee seems to really like Harlene.
Yes.
And Harlene does seem to really like her.
Which I get.
I can't tell if it's just for sex, but in my mind, Renee really wants a relationship. Maybe Harlene's just looking for sex. I don't know.
Yeah.
But they're into each other, and that is nice. We get a phone call at the table, and it's 1940s, so they actually bring the phone to the table.
I kind of like that.
It's clearly a bad phone call.
Yeah.
Now, on the Renee side of things, it seems like she got called away for work. On the audience side, we know it's Hastings calling like, Batman's here.
Yeah.
You might want to come down to the playpen real fast. So she tells her that, listen, I have to cut this date short, but listen, meet me later at Hopper's, which is presumably a bar.
Yes.
And they kiss.
Yeah.
It is a nice kiss.
Yeah, she kisses her
in
the
face. So they establish some emotional connection, and they establish some stakes, which is nice, because this show doesn't always do that.
Mm-hmm.
And you see the look on Renee's face, and that really matters for the end of this episode. So, for once, they're being a little bit more careful.
Also, it's one of those things where... Maybe Montoya didn't realize Harley was picking up on the same vibe because Harley's kind of playful. Harlene is kind of playful.
I mean, she knows it's a date.
Harley
said it was a date.
But like also to be fair, that version of Harlene is just kind of playful. There are some women who would say that about anything and it not be sexual.
Yeah. I'll say this. Renee was not expecting to be kissed.
Yes.
She is surprised and then really satisfied with that kiss. It's a good kiss.
It's not Batwoman though.
It's no Batwoman. But what is? Batman is stalking through the house, the Hastings house, and he's Batman. He finds the playpen. And Barbara's not too far behind him. Harley arrives. I guess she fucking teleports.
Yeah.
And
Hastings, she got fast travel.
She does. Hastings informs her that Batman has made his way in. Harley Quinn is quickly back in costume, and she's back in the playpen with Batman. And then she says some lines that are a little confusing, Mike. How did you interpret this? She says, "I knew you'd come for me. I knew it when I profiled you for the police. I'm your type." Is she talking about when she profiled Batman to help the police catch Batman?
Or is
she talking about when she profiled Bruce Wayne?
I think she's talking about Batman.
Okay, so she doesn't know his
secret. Because he is a costume guy who, as she says in the episode where she profiles him, has some what she assumes to be childhood trauma and has some degree of a fetish thing.
Okay.
And she is kind of all that.
And she does not
and she's dressed like a
peg him as Bruce Wayne yet.
I don't think so.
So Harley opens up the playpen basically now, and we get this fight that we can kind of clearly see coming. It's like basically a video game setup where like all the cells open. Yeah. And it's going to be a blunt instrument fight because all these guys have like bats and shit. Mike, these guys do not land a single hit on Batman.
I will say this much. Batman makes them all look stupid.
Correct.
I would have liked to have seen someone get punched.
Not even.
Batman does a lot of like chest pushing and pushing guys out of the way. Like just sock someone.
Well, I think he sees like these guys aren't fighters and they're hurt enough already. And that one guy has like a huge black eye. He got hit with a mallet in Collins over there.
Yeah.
Batman does get hit into a cell, and then Quinn closes the door on him and gasses him. So she did succeed in trapping him. And then she puts a clock on it. She activates a bomb to blow the house and says, maybe next time we can unpack that childhood trauma.
Which is
where I thought again. I was like, does she know he's Bruce Wayne? I guess not.
I guess, I don't know. She does mention childhood trauma in the episode where she's profiling
for
the cops.
That's an important catch, Mike. I guess she doesn't know.
Because I thought the same thing when I said that. And I'm like, wait a second. No, she says that in the prior episode. Oh, clearly has some sort of unresolved childhood trauma.
Yeah. Yeah. Harley and her, shall we call them, playthings escape. And Barbara thankfully makes her way down to the playpen, and she tries to free Batman with a bat.
Yeah, Batman.
She seems unaware that there's a countdown going on with a bomb. And then we cut to Hastings speeding away with Harlene. She notices Barbara's car and demands that Hastings turn the car around.
Mm-hmm.
This is actually the point where I decided I liked the episode.
Yes.
It actually took me this long.
Yeah.
Because as cool and well put together as the episode is until this point, I was kind of just like, ah, yeah, whatever, I got it.
Yeah.
I was not expecting Harlene Quinzel to be a more three-dimensional character.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So she's speeding away from the house. She knows it's going to blow up. She has Batman killed, she thinks. She sees Barbara's car, and because that's her friend, she goes back.
Yeah.
And I'm like, oh, you're not all villain. That's interesting.
No. And they're planting the seeds for her not being all villain the whole episode.
Right, which I frankly liked.
I always liked that, yeah.
Yeah, so she goes back for her. We cut back to Batman and Barbara. Barbara saves Batman, like, sort of narrowly. She, like, smashes the glass, I guess, in time to free him. Well, no, actually, that's not quite correct. She breaks the glass.
Yeah.
But the door is not yet ready to be opened.
Yeah.
And then Harlene makes her way back because she's returned to save Barbara, but Barbara won't leave without Batman. So reluctantly, Harlene frees Batman, but it's difficult. The Barbara has damaged the door too badly, so the explosions begin. But the important moment here is that Harlene gives in.
Mm-hmm.
She is willing to free Batman because that's what her friend needs her to do. Again, this is a nice three-dimensional depth of character that we have. Hilariously, Batman's cell is blown into the ocean. Barbara and Harlene flee the house.
Yeah.
Barbara ends up saving Harlene narrowly from falling. And we do the typical comic book, let me go, Barbie thing, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Save yourself. Batman swoops in. And he is able to save Barbara. And the way it is shot and the way it's animated, it's clear that he can't get both of them.
Yeah.
There are two different elevations. Barbara's the better one to save or the easier one to save. He makes that choice. He lets Harley Quinn drop. This is only moments after she just said, I'm not going to prison or Arkham.
Yeah.
and she falls. But famously, Mike, in comic books, water deaths do not count.
Nope.
Basically, if the character dies by hitting water, you know they're coming back. Yeah. They've done that in the animated series before.
They've
like
done that in
a Joker at the end of Laughing Fish dies in water. He's back, you know, a few episodes later.
Moriarty over the falls. It is
100% Moriarty over the falls. Yeah, yeah, yeah. So, listen, if there's no body, there is no death. Mm-hmm. And even sometimes when there is a body, frankly.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Well, in comic books, sure.
Yeah. So, but Barbara doesn't know that because she's lived. This is her real life.
Yeah.
So Barbara is standing at the edge of the cliffs looking down. She doesn't see Harley. She assumes she's dead. She is crying. Batman does not ease up on her at first. He says that, you know, you let your friendship make you reckless. You should have left when I told you. And she tells him crying, you know, shut up, just shut up.
Mm-hmm.
And he hears the police sirens and he's like, I gotta go. And then they made me like the episode even more because then he's like, I'm sorry.
Yeah.
He actually apologizes before he goes. And she turns to him, but he's gone. He does the Batman thing. But I was like, okay, so this show, which is often not great, does do interesting, correct emotional things, and it still has good beats.
Yeah.
They do that in making Harley a three-dimensional character who's not all villain, mm-hmm. and they do that in giving Batman fucking finally an emotional, compassionate moment that allows him to linger for a goddamn second in his own show.
Yeah. And also, it's another connection between the Gordons and Batman having kind of common ground, which is nice.
Right. This last scene, and I am a melancholy sucker for this stuff. I love this last scene.
Yeah, it's good.
Loved the last scene. Like, great. Brett, Hopper's Jazz Club, we're outside. Renee is waiting out in the dark. I think it's kind of raining. It's wet, at least, right? No sign of Harleen. She looks disappointed, sad, upset, disappointed. The payphone rings. It's Harleen. She says, I've got to leave town for a while. I'll look you up when I'm back. And Harleen asks Renee to keep an eye on Barbie. And she hangs up and that's kind of it. And then there's this image of the lonely Renee Montoya in the phone booth against the blue light of the jazz club. And that image is just so painterly and beautiful and sad. And I was like, this is as good as this show is going to get.
Yeah.
Not because the show is bad, but because this is the kind of new stuff that it's capable of. Whereas I don't think the animated series does moments quite like this.
No, because it can't.
Right. To be clear, the animated series is better. Mm. But Cape Crusader is capable of these interesting, deep, frankly, very adult, mature, emotional moments where I was like, wow, I love this last scene. It feels like this poetic, melancholy thing. Valentine's noir, this image, the blue jazz light, really cool stuff.
And it's got yearning. It's like, it's got, it's, you know, you have a character who is in love and they get the, hey, I gotta be out of town for a while, which is very common in a noir environment.
Yeah, I agree. Yeah. Mike, what are your closing thoughts on Stress of Her Regard?
I like this episode a lot. I think there's a lot of weird things. I think we've covered it ad nauseum at what's weird in this episode. But I think ultimately in the episode contained within this series, the way they're going to do things, I think it's very well done.
Yeah. If you can somehow leave behind everything about Harley Quinn that you know, and you can accept this new character, and you can accept this is not a Batman episode, it's a good episode.
Yeah.
And it does work for me.
Yes.
I think, unfortunately, and I said this very similarly at the end of our previous episode, I'm still tied up in the things that aren't working.
Yeah.
But if I can push them aside long enough, this is a good, artful episode with mature characters and themes and emotions expressed really nicely with three-dimensional characters.
And we only have 5 episodes left of this first season, so I'm going to see where it goes from here.
Yeah. And we'll be seeing that soon. So the next time we do Cape Crusader Cast, Mike will be taking us through Night Ride.
Night Ride.
Do we know what Night Ride is about? Do we have any idea on Night Ride?
No. I imagine David Hasselhoff's in it.
I sure hope so. Mm. Hey.
That would be Night Rider.
Yes. Night Rider. Disasterer.
Disasterer party.
Party. Hey, this was a long episode.
Yeah, it was.
Thank you for joining us. This was Cape Crusader Cast. For Mike Staub, I'm Jordan Hugh. Thank you and see you next time. Same bat time, same bat channel.